This is Without Compromise, a show that explores what happens when you won't settle for anything less than your crazy ideas. We'll talk to athletes, founders, adventurers, and entrepreneurs of all kinds about living without compromise. I'm your host, Mason Gravely. Welcome to the show.
We're programmed for survival, so our instinct is to give up on these situations, to move away from them.
I thought if I didn't sign up for that race, that I was just going to disappear.
It doesn't have to be these big, huge things that everyone thinks you need to do to make a difference.
Hey folks, you might have noticed there is a new brew here at Athletic, and it's called Fancy Like. Made in collaboration with the famous country singer-songwriter Walker Hayes, who has a hit song with the same name, Fancy Like. You may have heard it. It was completely viral a couple years ago. Absolutely blew up and made his career totally take off. But what you'll realize, and what is often the case, it wasn't an overnight success. Walker had been plugging away in Nashville for years, growing a family, working a job he didn't love, trying to make it. And his path is as non-traditional as Athletic Brewing's in non-alcoholic beer. We're going to go all the way back to his childhood, where he met his wife, grew up in Mobile, Alabama, how he got to Nashville, what are some of the things he did right along the way, some advice for anyone taking the road less traveled, and the inspiration behind the Fancy Like brew. So if you're a fan of easy drinking and simple living in a classic American pale, you're going to love Fancy Like. I encourage you to get some. It's selling out fast. The pre-sale sold out in 18 hours. So if you want to get some, go to athleticbrewing.com and make sure you get it before it's gone. So let's go ahead and welcome Walker now. Let's get fancy. Well, man, the first thing I want to thank you for is I'm now not the only person around here that says y'all. So I appreciate you bringing that in. Because, you know, I'm from the South, but the brewery, Connecticut, and then San Diego, there's not a lot of Southerners around here. So I'm a little alone in the company, but I appreciate you coming in and bringing a little country to Athletic
Let's
Brewing.
Go. Yeah, man. I was born and raised in Mobile. And country is the funny word. You probably can relate being where you're from in Florida. It's like country, I don't know, just quite describe, like we hunt, you know, and stuff and fish and things like that, but there's no Western about me. Like it's not like I grew up with some spurs on my boots, you know, or a lasso in my hand. But yeah, man, my wife and I both grew up in Mobile. We met in high school. I was a junior, she was a senior. Yeah, man, just Mobile was very Southern coastal area. Jimmy Buffett was the king of everything. Yeah, it was like parrot heads left and right. I mean, he was my first concert. And man, I just had like kind of your normal, I mean, I had a blended family. I mean, that was the weirdest thing about me, was that both of my mom and my dad both had four kids apiece, and then they had me. So they got married and had me. So I'm technically the last of nine, but none of them are full brother. They're all half. Right. Brothers and sisters. And so, yeah, man, my dad was a retired music minister, sold real estate. So like growing up, I got a front row seat on just hanging with people. Like I've always loved one-on-one relationships. And I think that's because I watched my dad just drive people around, you know, and show them houses and list their homes and stuff. And I kind of loved that game. That was kind of the initial plan for me. I was a big athlete. You know, growing up, that was just a natural way for a guy to fit in, especially with my siblings. I kind of followed in their footsteps. Just wanted to be cool like my big brothers. Me and Lanny met late in the game in high school, right before it was like decision time. You know, what are you going to do with your life? I didn't know nothing about college, but she was going. So I followed her to Birmingham Southern, which was, that was a good path. I wouldn't regret it. And, I, you know, growing up as a kid, I was never like a long-term thinker. Like I never would have said like as a kid, I'm gonna grow up and be a this or that. You know, I just was kind of in the moment guy. Like today's a good day. You know, got a basketball game today. It's gonna be good. You know, just not never really long-term thinking.
That's funny.
And then it wasn't until, honestly, you know, any path that I chose, like perhaps a major and stuff in college, I really only chose those kind of on whims because I was supposed to have a major selected by my sophomore year or by the end of, you know, college. Actually, my three best friends, they were all going to be doctors. And I kind of freaked out for a minute. I was like, maybe I should be a dentist.
I've got a nice smile. Maybe I should be a dentist.
Yeah, honestly, I was like, you know, they all got it figured out. Maybe I'll do that. So honestly, found out I wasn't smart enough to be a dentist. I mean, I took organic chemistry and I squeaked through it. But man,
I failed the first time.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. First half of organic chemistry might be the universal hardest class in college. But man, at the end of that year, Laney and I had a tough year that year.
Because I assume long distance through all this, or through a lot of it?
We were, man. Laney and I, we did the long distance thing, and it's like we would get that mastered, and then we would get together, you know, in the same, like we would be in the same college, and it wasn't as easy as long. Like we mastered the phone thing, and then when we were in the same college, it was tough, you know, and then we would break up for the summers and get back together, and then we saw each other at a wedding after that year, and the feelings were just still there, man. It was crazy when we saw each other, and we instantly got engaged. And wow. And it was crazy, you know. We're talking, so we met when I was 17. This is us around 22 years old, and you know, we really should. I think the world is saying, hey, you know, what are you going to do with your life? Even my dad was like, you know, are you going to ever marry this girl? You know, there was a lot of external just time pressures, you know, like the clock was ticking. So we thought, so we get engaged, and while we're engaged, this is like the music story. While we were engaged, her parents asked me this list of questions. They had a legal pad with like, what are you going to do to provide? You know, how many kids do y'all want? Where would you like to live? And man, I had the most amazing answer. You know, they loved them. It was basically stay in Mobile.
And you're making all this up. Are you really intending this?
No. I mean, I think at this point in my life, I mean, I'm ashamed to say, because I think no one should say this at this age, but I was just like, the only thing I was excited about was marrying Laney. I was going to just end up selling real estate with my dad. But honestly, I just felt the need to grow up, you know, do a responsible thing, you know. And so, and honestly, I loved working with my dad. My brothers worked with him. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't fun. And I didn't have a good time going to work. But I got my real estate license. I started selling real estate. And that was my answer to the job question. For her parents. And I wasn't unsettled. I was fine. I started making some money selling real estate. And for me, you know, closing those deals is quite addictive. Like, it's a game, you know. You close one, you list another, you know, you have a lot of plates you're spinning, and it's a fun game.
Feast and famine, you know, there's a lot of gamification of it, honestly.
Totally. It's exhilarating, you know, closing those deals. And honestly too, you know, I'm 22 and a half. You know, you close a $300,000 house, you get a 7% check. You're like, what do y'all do with all this money? You know, it was like, dude, I'm rich.
Absolutely. And so, absolutely.
Yeah. And so that was cool. But man, my dad, on a whim, this is the craziest story. He calls me on like a Tuesday, and he's at this bar on Dauphin Island Parkway. And he says, crazy. They knew they had nothing down there back then. He says, I talked to the bar manager here. She said you could play some songs here on Friday. I mean, that's literally what he said. He didn't give me like, there's a party on Friday. I want you, like, all he had heard was me literally just strumming some songs, mimicking some people in my living room. And this was a great example of who my dad was. He didn't think anything through as much as I do. I mean, I got that from him, honestly. He just, you know, I remember when I was like 5 years old, he picked up sailing, bought a boat, and just went out there and started putting sails up in the air, you know. And like, we didn't know anything, but we eventually got the hang of it, and he was really, really good at it. But But yeah, man, he calls me one week and he's like, Trudy said you could play. And I'm honestly like embarrassed. I'm frustrated. I'm like, Dad, I'm a grown man. I'm not a kid anymore. You know, you can't just sign me up for auditions down at the thing anymore. You know, you have to ask me if I want to do this thing. And I caught myself being a real about it to him. And I was finally like, okay, look, man, I'll play Friday. Just please don't do this to me again. You know, this is crazy. And man, I remember I showed up, I played the gig. I was scared to death. My fingers barely worked. I've never, you know, stage fright. I was nervous. I remember Trudy, the bar manager, when I would finish the song, she would clap her hands to like let the crowd know that I'd finished the song, because there wasn't nobody listening. And man, when I left that gig, my mind was made up. I mean, it was like, I want to do this every night that I can. I don't care what I have. Like, I don't care what money it makes. I don't care anything. I want to do this. And I called Lainey. Lainey was living in Birmingham at the time. And I said, what do you think about moving to Nashville? And she was like, sure. Yeah. I mean, that sounds awesome. And so we drove there after our honeymoon. I mean, I found us an apartment. And we took like a couch and a bed up there, and then we literally left our honeymoon and drove to Nashville. Didn't know anybody, and just started giving the music thing a go. Jeez, it's crazy. Man. I know. It's crazy.
Do you look back I've heard you say this in other interviews, but do you look back and cringe at some of the moves you made or some of the decisions, or like what must have my parents or my in-laws thought about me at that time? They must have just, and I look back 10, 15 years ago and think,
right,
my father-in-law, God bless him for never saying anything, because I sure would have.
But, yeah.
You know what I mean? Do you ever look back and think that?
Yeah. You know, I think there's, honestly, man, I think there's just a naivety sometimes that, look, I don't know, you know, maybe the Lord gives it to us because we learn, you know, you learn through all those stupid decisions you make, but then some of the stupidest decisions you've made in your life are the best ones. And I don't really understand, you know, how it all works, but yes, I mean, I even as I tell this story now, a story that I've told at least three times a week, especially since we exploded, you know, and when I tell it, I think of my own kids and I think of how, you know, whatever they're deciding today could have a wild impact, you know, on their life in a mighty way. But yeah, I mean, I do cringe. Cringe is the great word, because bro, I mean, it's not like, you know, if talent dictated everything that happens in this world, it would be just a completely different universe. I mean, you know as well as I, like, it's not the sharpest tool in the shed. I mean, there's so much that goes into dreams coming true and where we wind up in life. And yeah, I mean, dude, I didn't know anything. I couldn't play. I couldn't remember the words and sing and strum the guitar to four songs. And I was like, let's go to Nashville, you know? And honestly, I'll tell you what I also did besides cringe and remember those dinners, you know, when I had to explain to Lainey's parents. Listen, man, Lainey's parents and I, it's not like our relationship was magic at that point. You know, I mean, they knew me since I was 17 and I was not voted most likely to succeed coming out of high school. You know, it was like the best case scenario for me would have been like play a sport, you know, through college and succeed at it and really stay. Maybe he got his stuff together, but that was not what I did in college, you know? And so, you know, we had a lot of kinks and there were more kinks, you know, once I sat them down and said, hey, guess what? I want to be a rock star. They weren't surprised because they knew me, but then they were also just like, oh my God, what is my daughter doing? You know? and so, you know, we had to deal with that a lot. Not even just then, you know, in our marriage and stuff. And then bro, we get to Nashville and it's like, I don't have any hits forever, but we keep having kids. you know, and we, you
oh,
know, so,
oh, yeah,
but,
you did that.
But, you know, I look back also, the flip side of that cringe, though, is that I look back and I go, man, I hope I never lose that sense of why not? You know what I mean? Like, why would I wake up and be careful? Because it's not like life is long. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like we take any of this with us when we go. And what do I want to teach my kids? Do I want to teach them to wake up and go, man, I got this passion inside me. I probably shouldn't follow that. You know, I don't want to teach my kids to do that. You know, I want to teach them, find something that you want to go be tortured and do. You know what I mean? Organic chemistry wasn't worth it to me. But Nashville, I was like, I don't care. I'll fail over and over and over, you know? It's all right.
My wife reads a lot of books, and she asked me the other day, she's like, you know, what's the last book that made you cry? And I said Organic Chemistry. And
that's great.
Man, that's you know, I do in a lot of the interviews I heard a lot of the stories, your sobriety and the bad decisions you make. But my next question was, what do you think you did right on this journey to following a dream in Nashville? Because in a lot of the talks I heard, it was talking about those things that you had, the missteps even. But what do you think you were on the right track about? And I think that's probably a big, big part of it right there. Being able to just say, why not, and go for it. Anything else you think that's like, you know, that was something I have that's unique? Was there any other aspect to you that you think that was a good thing?
Well, one, you know, regrets that I'll never have in life, no matter how poor I ever get or stupid I ever look, you know, in the face of the public eye or whatever, you know, we'll be loving Lainey, you know, with everything I've got, you know, and I'm not a great husband. You know, I'm working on it all the time. You know, I'm not an excellent father, but I say I'm sorry as many times as I think it. And I, you know, I promise my kids, you know, it's the whole, I'll pay for your therapy one day. I promise, you know, if I have to get three jobs, I'll handle it. You know, I'll take care of your therapist. So the family part that went totally against all odds, especially in my industry, I will never regret. And that's the greatest thing. That's the greatest thing I've tasted here on earth is the love of family, loving someone like Lainey who knows me regardless. I mean, she knows all of the ways that I fail through and through. I mean, she could predict it. And she's still here, and me the same about her. And so that having that companion, has been priceless. You know, obviously my sobriety, I'm sure we're going to touch on that, but the miraculous, part of that story, just stopping drinking 8 years ago was life changing for me. But as far as right, man, I don't know, you know, my line of work is so interesting, and I don't know how to describe that thing you have to still be doing it, you know, at a certain age with no success. It's almost like you have to have something wrong with you in the brain. There's just more people come to Nashville and they eventually go, this is not normal. You know, the amount of the odds are really, really stacked against you. It's not worth it to me, but for some reason, I continue to wake up and I know those things. I know the odds. I know what failure feels like really well. I'm very accustomed to failure, but I also wake up and I still have a dream. You know, I still have a song I want to write, you know, and my wife has never encouraged me to say, hey, if nothing good happens this week, why don't you go get a normal job, you know? And, you know, my kids have never said, Dad, you know, give it up. And I've never really thought to give up. You know, there was a moment, it was about 8 years ago, and my wife had just had our sixth kid. And, man, I just didn't really have anything on the horizon, not at all. And I honestly, I'd begin to, as comfortable isn't the right word, but you know, I was stacking hours that go where the benefits got better and the, you know, you get a little bit of like a quarter raise, you know, each hour. And you start going, man, I've been here a minute. This is getting comfortable. Maybe comfortable is the word, but you know, it was like, I was just trying to take care of the kids. So I would work at nights, basically nights, like I would clock in at 4.
And that's a powerful narrative to tell yourself. And that's you can really settle into the, like, well, I've got to do this for the kids.
Totally. Your whole life. And I could, dude, I got nothing. I mean, that's honorable. You know, I do think, I mean, I was not embarrassed. The only embarrassment was, you know, some music execs and stuff that I'd worked with in the past would shop and come face to face. And I was like, yeah, man, how's it going? I'm stocking strawberries, you know, and that was humbling, man. I mean, that really was. And I remember, honestly, the way I got the job, a dude asked me for my autograph at a restaurant where I was playing, and he worked at Costco. And I was like, man, are they hiring? You know, and he, you know, you could see the look on his face change. Like, man, I'm trying to be a musician. You need a job, you know, and that was very humbling.
Because you had a record deal and it didn't blow up like you thought. And I mean, there's a lot of false summits. Let's put it that
bro,
way.
So I had so many clothes. I mean, I've had 3 record deals that I lost. I've had publishing companies. I've had massive artists, you know, hold on to my songs for years and almost cut them, you know, and I've almost been, I was in the last 3 to be in Broadway play. I mean, I've literally, you talk about somebody who has been cut, rejected. I've been on a couple of those reality shows, you know, where you just get demolished, you know, when you get up and sing and they tell you these things are wrong with you. And this, you know, I mean, I've been through so much of that. But again, I just, you know, at that point, it was beginning to, for the first time in my life, it was taking a toll on my body. I began to see that I'm not invincible and that, you know, my body was suffering. You know, I was drinking 24/7, working at 4 a.m. to 11, playing afternoon luncheons and then writing songs and then doing it again and again. And man, I was a zombie, you know. In the meantime, Lainey was always pregnant, you know, and it was like, good God.
For about a decade.
Right. And so it, for real, man. And you know, you get to where you're like, I remember getting signed by my mentor for basically another shot, you know, to make a record and stuff. And it was emotional. It was incredible. We met in Smoothie King. I saw my idol. I saw him in line at Smoothie King. And I tapped him on the shoulder and was like, I was like, man, I'm desperate. I don't want to be this guy, but I need a home. I just need a place to write songs. And he knew of me and we struck up a relationship and he signed me. And I remember, this is hard to believe, but I remember being afraid to leave Costco because I just knew, man, I've been through this. I don't think this dude's going to make it. He's not going to all of a sudden be the puzzle piece, you know, that makes my music explode. But I got to go. You don't say no to this opportunity, you know. But I do remember leaving Costco thinking, man, this is like breaking up with a bad girlfriend. Like, you're used to her. So you don't know what's out there. So you're afraid to leave because you're just so comfortable. You know, you're comfortable there. So that was if people were like, were you ever going to give up? My body just was wearing out. But again, I would still wake up and scribble song ideas, you know, on my hand and write them and lay them down. And so. I think I knew that giving up might have been the wiser choice at some point in my life, but my wife wouldn't let me, you know, my soul wouldn't let me, you know.
The double-edged sword of country music is you need those experiences to write those songs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In the words of the great Alan Jackson, Lordy, how the wheels turn slow.
Yeah.
It takes a long time, man. And I'm sure you saw people come and go in that world pretty often.
Always.
Yeah. I want to ask, because a lot of people have some sort of dream that's not panning out like they think it's going to, or something that's been with them a long time that maybe they act on when they can, like you were. Now that you've, I mean, I don't want to say no one's journey is ever over, but now that you've seen some success and have been able to see the fruits of a lot of that labor, what can you say to folks that might be in the middle of that, might be right close to some sort of threshold or breakthrough that you're like, all right, here's what kept me keep going and it might help others?
That's a great question. Yeah. And man, that gives me goosebumps. I think the only reason we hear that voice is because that's kind of what we're taught, this level of success, this bar. And then we all internally have another bar, you know, and it may be higher or lower to the world standards. And I don't know about you, but mine's pretty freaking high. You know, when, like, I've never had a dream that was realistic. You know, most of my goals, if I were to voice them to you, you might laugh. You might be like, wow, you know. And I think what I would have loved somebody to tell me, which I learned over time, is those goals are they're great to have. They really are great to have. But working, you know, stress working, you know, lying awake at night because you're comparing yourself to other people, that's not a healthy thing. And also that, man, when all those dreams come true, nothing's going to be different. You're going to be the same. You're going to be the same guy in the mirror. It you know, success and fame and dreams and all that stuff, it's not going to fix anything that matters at all. So by saying all that, enjoy those goals, chase those goals every day, like face failure. Don't be afraid of failure. And when those voices pop up, you know, shut them up and look around and be grateful be grateful you have a dream. Because, man, you know, look, I'm 44 and there's not a lot of people with dreams out there. There's not a lot of people who are even brave enough or in a space from wherever their childhood was to even think that they can dream. They can have a dream. They can wake up and go, I want to start a non-alcoholic brewing company. I want to write a song today. That's amazing if you have one of those. And I think us dreamers, we just take that for granted sometimes. And we go, it hasn't come true, or it's not, you know, it's not working out today. You know, I spend a lot of time focusing on that negative voices, you know, I'm hearing left and right. And I would say, man, just take that dream and love it, enjoy having it. If I had one regret, like through this whole journey, I just wish I would have enjoyed the getting to the success part. You know, I really hold my family close to me, and I hold my wife very close to me. And those were some sweet times, the journey here. Those were some really good times that I'd give anything to have really tasted them fully. You know, and again, a lot of that, man, has to do with my sobriety. I mean, I started drinking when I was 13, and I didn't stop till I was 36. Okay, so if that makes any sense, I hope that answers the question. It's you know, I think we, especially in America, we just take a dream for granted again, and we focus on the, oh, it's dark or it's this, you know. And I think, I don't know, I think the world tells us a lot of lies about success, money, you know, making something of ourselves. And I think Bill would agree, like, all your dreams coming true, you know, probably blowing up Athletic, he's still struggling with the same struggles he would struggle with, except he's got this business, which is cool and hopeful, and it employs people, and it's amazing. It's an amazing company. But that journey, man, just that journey is the sweet part. That is the sweet. If you can wake up every day and go, dude, what a day. What a day God's made. I mean, I woke up today. I'm breathing. Got some dogs. I'm hanging with a buddy. You know, we're tired. If we could savor these, you know, interactions, these moments more than just focus on that destination, I think we'd all probably be more just better assets to society in general, you know, with our with our time here on Earth.
Wow. That, you know, I've never really thought about it that way, because I have a dream, you know, something I want to do. And I'll be honest, most of the time it feels torture's too extreme, but it's like this thorn in my side almost there. It's like it's always there. It's always a reminder that I'm not there yet. I'm not at that point. And I'm not, it's not a selfish thing or like a, well, I guess, you know, in a way, but it's like this thing I want to do. And I've never thought about it. Well, I should be thankful I even have that to kind of focus on at times. Cause it's just, I take it for granted. I'm sure having a dream itself. I've never really thought about that.
Yeah. And dude, great dreams. I mean, dude, I've been so mad at my dream, you know, so many times. But yeah, I mean, that's what a gift. I mean, I have six kids, and I'll tell you what, man, I'll probably get emotional talking about this, but when you wake up and there's something in your kid's eye and you can't distract them from it, cause they're just like, dude, I gotta do this. What are you doing? I'm doing this thing. You know, I love it. Like my daughter, she's in cosmetology school, and I look at her and I go, man, I wish I enjoyed music as much as she loves cosmetology school, which is funny because she hates school. She's hated school. She's hated it all her life. And now, you know, we get out of Christmas break and she's like, I can't wait to go back to school, you know? And I just, you know, that glimmer where you go, she is loving doing something. And again, man, that thing you talk about, that thorn, do you ever really, I could preach all this stuff, but do I ever wake up and I'm like, really don't need a reminder? Like, just look around, dude. Look at your kid. Look at the clothes you have. You got a sweatshirt that'll last 5 years if you wash it, right? That's amazing, you know? But we just, you know, America, we just have a lot. And we have plenty, and there's this thing pressing on us, like, you're not enough. You need more. You need more of this. But like you said, you just hearing you say it reminded me. I mean, you really are gifted, and you live on a different level. If you wake up and you're like, there's something I want to do, and I can actually do it. Like, I can actually chase it. I can try, you know, today. And work towards it. And bro, you got a family. That's been one of the most amazing things to me, is like coming home and my kid going, dude, dad, how was your show? And me going, you know, it was good, but like, I can improve some things, you know, working on that out loud with my children. I mean, that's something I wish I could have done with my dad, you know, said, how'd the sale go? Tell me about it, you know, but I was too dumb. Like, I didn't hang out with my dad like that. I wish I had, but you know, your dream, you know, you have the opportunity to go, son or daughter, you know, I got this dream. You might see me work on it in front of you, and you'll see what that process is like, you know?
It can feel really selfish at times, but you got to remember that, you know, me pursuing this dream can often be a template for those around me and totally. Give others the freedom to do what they want to do. And yes, it might in the moment, and it might actually be selfish at times, but if you can balance that and keep that in mind, you know, it gives others that permission, really.
It does.
That's awesome. Well, tell me a little bit, because I know sobriety is a big part of your story, and we don't that here at Athletic. Man, 90% of the people that drink Athletic, 80 to 90, drink alcohol, and they're coming back for whatever reason. But for you, in non-alcoholic beer, what was your discovery? Were you always just a fan of beer after quitting drinking, or was it like needed to try it at some point?
I think everybody, God just makes a billion different types of people.
Like 7 billion.
Yeah. And I'm a very, like, I noticed about me, you know, when I quit alcohol, which was miraculous, I went straight to the gym. I think that's probably like kind of a common path. Like, you know, people quit something they're putting in their body, and then they begin to treat their body differently. And I realized quickly that the damage I was doing to my relationships with alcohol was very similar to the damage I would do to them with the gym. You know, my life was just like, when do I get in the gym again? You know what I mean? Like, that's, I immediately learned, okay, hey, I have gotten rid of a really dangerous habit. I'm making this one just as dangerous, you know, very quickly. You know, I'm a year into the gym and it's 2 hours a day. It's like, it's pre-workout. You know, I am like, my joints are really feeling like, man, this is too much, but like, I cannot lift enough, you know? And it was like, and then I was going to D1 and I could push a tractor tire from here to Texas, but I don't know why. I'm like a 38-year-old dude. Like, I have no reason to be that. Yeah. It's like, what am I about to go try out for the Packers or what, you know? It's like, and you know, my kids and wife, you know, they're like, where you been? And so anyway, I just learn a lot about, like, I love the experience of stuff. Like when I drink coffee, I like the right mug and you know, and it's not necessarily what the substance is doing to me. It's the experience of having a cup of coffee, you know, in the morning. And I do love the taste of beer. And for a while there, you know, I was afraid to try a non-alcoholic beer because I thought it would be a little too close kind of to home, you know, for that. But man, I discovered Athletic. I can't even remember the first Athletic, you know, beer I discovered, but beer, just the taste of beer, and the, you know, just the brew, it goes with every, like, I'm a huge family guy. We're a bonfire family. We're a bow family. We're on the coast. We hunt. We fish. I write songs. You know, I mean, beer sits next to everything awesome, in my opinion. And so, you know, I began drinking Athletic's beers, and I enjoyed, you know, I just enjoyed them. The taste goes so well with everything. Just cracking one open, end of the day, you know, it feels so good. And then, you know, there's no hangover. There's no stupid decisions, you know, and it's very enjoyable for me. But I am a very vocal non-alcoholic, like, person. I share my struggle with alcoholism out loud, kind of as if to just make the world my accountability partner. So I don't, like, not talk about it ever. I'm always writing songs about it. I'm always addressing recovery in every single show I ever play. It's part of my mission, honestly. It's really prevalent in my family. And so I want to kind of help anybody in my situation or who is like me to kind of be released from that shame or that, you know, guilt that might, you know, sit around that problem. And but because I just think it's a healthier way to live.
Pre-sale of Fancy Like, the beer with the namesake of your hit song, it sold out in 18 hours, man. 18 yeah. hours was the pre-sale was gone, which is...
That's right.
Gosh, man. Well, you know, part of this brew together, Fancy Like, is being our chief fancy officer. Tell us a little bit about what you do as the new CFO. What is that like?
Dude, I do nothing. No, man. Athletic, look, I root for stuff kind of obnoxiously, you know, talking about Talladega. Look, I met Joey Logano. I'll be car 22 for life, you know, and I just get behind things. You know, I think whether you're a race car driver, a painter, you're a non-alcoholic brewer, you know, we're all kind of the same, you know, we're all fighting the same odds. We all, again, we just goes back to, we all had dreams, you know, that were pretty freaking crazy. And, you know, Athletic was something that I tasted and I needed. You know, I was like, this is amazing. And I loved Athletic and could not be more grateful that they included me, you know, to make a beer, you know, this that dream was like that dream of mine is like 3.5 years old. A friend of mine named Eric and I were walking around the neighborhood, and he said, bro, you know what you need to do is making a non-alcoholic beer. And that I could not have chosen. My favorite tasting non-alcoholic beers were Athletic are already. Now, I am just a normal dude. I like just a classic, just your vanilla beer. I'm not fancy, which is why Fancy, like, I think was such a, it was a personal song, you know, that resonated with people. And that's, you know, there could not be a better name for this beer we have made. And Athletic was so kind to even care what I thought taste-wise, because I'm not like the chemist, you know, behind the beer. I don't know beer that well. I just know that when I taste something, I respond to a feeling more than an actual like taste bud thing happening. And the Fancy Like beer literally hits the spot. I mean, I think it is the perfect brew every single time I crack one, and I'd never get it. It's incredible. I cannot wait, you know, for the country audience to get it. I mean, it's going to be at my venues and stuff. It's going to be insane. Yeah, man. As that video we made was pretty awesome. And man, just honestly, Athletic, you know, you ever meet one of your heroes and they're just awesome? I mean, that's rare, honestly, but you meet your hero and you're like, you could not be any cooler. And you just leave with this even fuller appreciation. That is how I felt with Athletic. I mean, just the visuals, the vibe, the mission, the camaraderie, you know, within the factory, you know, just everything really coincides with just kind of what I stand for or want to stand for. And, man, it's really just been perfect. And then the pre-sales, that was crazy. I mean, that, you know, man, that was nuts. But man, we're so excited. I'm trying to get this beer in as many freaking places as I can. I won't shut up about it. And it's been one of the most fun adventures for me outside of music, without a doubt.
And I'm excited to see folks, especially down here in the South, really latch on and have a beer that they're accustomed to drinking and something that goes well lakeside, oceanside,
oh, yeah,
boatside, barbecue. It's been awesome. But, well, man, I got a couple rapid fire questions for you.
Come on.
All right. My first question is, actually, it's a statement. Did you know this? This is, you know, some research has been done. Do you know what you get before a runner's high?
No.
A Walker Hayes. I just made that up. I've been thinking about awesome. That one. That was only a month
ago. I love
work.
It.
All right, for real though, what's your jawline routine? Because that thing's not natural.
Oh, shut it, dude. That's I'm sure it's probably been broken a couple times. So maybe
maybe
couple
that's
random.
Like bone growth.
I think so. That one side kind of pokes out, and I'm like, I think I can remember who hit or which brother, you know, hit that. But man, I don't know. I have a, I don't know, people always bring that up and I'm like, yeah.
Oh, it's funny. Well really, what are you most curious right now about, let's say outside of music?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think the Family Feud answer would be you know, the future. But really, you know, I'm curious about my kids, you know, future, and just our life together. You know, my oldest is 18, my youngest is 8. And so, we're going to begin to see mine kind of trickle out, you know, into the world. And at the same time, man, just, you know, I kind of see, this is a weird way to look at life. I think it's interesting, but like all my musical things have happened. Like we did it, you know, we hit the gong about as hard as you can. And it's like, what's on the horizon for me? Like this is a random dream of mine, but I would love to coach high school basketball. Now, I don't know how that, I don't know how that, like, it doesn't really fit in my schedule. But,
yeah, right.
You know,
well, you've
but
got
yeah,
a team.
Man, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's, I think that, you know, I'm always like, my life thus far, it, you know, telling you my story even, and I'm sure you can say this, when you look back, you're like, man, it's crazy how I wound up here today, you know, if you think about it. And then I'm 44, so I'm starting to think, what is like, what's 60 look like? Like, what it, like, you tack on another 16, a lot can happen, you know, and so, yeah, I mean, that's a curiosity to me. But again, I try to really remind myself, just be today, just be here, because it's all, yeah.
You've seen a lot of success, but there's still goals that are out there. What would you say is one of the biggest goals you haven't yet achieved?
It's crazy you just asked me this. I've always wanted to write the music to some theatrical thing, like that could perhaps be an animated movie or score a movie. But I just started a Broadway musical with that guy who I met in Smoothie King, and it's phenomenal. And we're a couple songs in. So that's, man, to see, you know, Lord willing, if I ever got to see that play out, that would be pretty amazing. But that's about it, man. I mean, again, you know, we are really blessed. Fancy, like, I mean, we sold out the Houston Rodeo, which honestly, we're me and my buddies on stage, they played Puckett's Grocery with me 12 years ago. So we're all looking at each other like, I mean, we're on a stage that's like a star that moves up and down and spins around. And we were just like, what is happening? So, yeah, man, I mean, I don't really have any, you know, crazy musical goals. Now, you know, me talking about the dream, I'm wide open, man. I'm like, let's go. I want another one, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, yeah. You were saying not having a ton of long-term goals, and I was wondering if that's still the case. So what would you say, you know, you're known for trick shots. You do a lot
yes,
of that.
Sir.
And but I want to ask you something. What would you say is one of your most memorable missed shots?
Oh,
like, oh my gosh, that would have been sick. You might not have one.
No. We have quite a few that we've missed. One that I'm really jealous of my son, because he got it and I spent a lot more time than he did on this shot. And man, this is hilarious. There's one shot you can see Baylor, and he flipped two highlighters and they both landed standing up. Now, this is, listen, in 365 trick shots, this was the hardest. It doesn't matter. I mean, we've done some crazy shots, but I basically would sit at this table right here for 1 or 2 hours a day flipping highlighters with a phone in front of me. And it actually caused minor problems in my marriage. Like, there was a moment where my wife was like, hey, I'm starting to get worried about you. You know, you're in your 40s. You just wake up in your pajamas and you just start flipping highlight, you know. And she was getting annoyed at the sound. And I began to think, man, maybe I do have a problem. Like, maybe I need to see somebody about this. But man, my son, he would spend equal amount of time, and he's the one who finally got it. But yeah, the flipping two highlighters, we've done some, man, most of them, we don't give up, you know, and we just keep on trying. There was one also where we were throwing footballs at our Prius driving by on the road, trying to land it in the sunroof. And after about 3 or 4 dents, I was like, we got to stop. You know, we got to give it. Like, I don't want to tear up the car.
Oh, man, I love it. Well, I know that was a daily habit for a long time, as the trick shots are still is. But in pursuing these goals and doing what you do, is there a daily habit you always stick to? Like, every day I try to do this. I know you drink a lot of coffee, but is there anything that's like, you know, when I try to do this every day when I can?
No, you know, I don't. That is, man, that is a, that's, I think, you know, most, I try to be real honest about this. I think most people would find this fascinating. I am not a, honestly, the trick shots, they're the only thing in my life. My kids and wife, we were laughing about this. This is the first thing I've ever done for a year. And I will challenge, I will say, everybody needs to do that at some point in their life. The lessons you learn by doing something, even if it's very small, do it for every day for a year and see what happens to you and what you learn. I'm not that guy, man. I am not a, man, I wake up at 4:50, work out till 5:10. I'm not that guy at all. Now, one thing I try to, and I forget to do this, but one thing I really, really work hard to do is try to not be, you know, you mentioned the word selfish. And I think sometimes your dreams, your goals, they can lure you to that, you know, way of life where you wake up and you're like, can everybody just be a little more convenient for my path, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a natural place humans go. But I try to do at least one thing with my kids wholeheartedly, 1,000%, even if it's just not me. Like, I didn't grow up a gamer, but I play Rocket League with my son, you know, on the PlayStation. I try to, you know, that's where those TikTok dances came from. You know, I do that with Leela, my 16-year-old boy, Chapel. We hit the gym together every day. And I know all about these anime movies. But, and look, they couldn't be further. I know all these weird, you know, I just try to do something. Like, if they're into it, I dive into it, man. I wear the shirt. I wear the gear. I do the thing. And that to me is a life-changing decision of, you know, a dad can make that will really, really, honestly, it'll impact you more than it does your kids, probably.
You know, man, I got one more question.
Yeah.
And the second to last usually is favorite athletic brewing beer, but you know, I think that's going to be fancy. Like, I think it's obvious. I'll save your,
yeah,
save the time. But, you know, we used to say, and it used to say in our cans is, you know, brew without compromise. But what we realized is, you know, to do anything off the beaten path and to do it well, especially when there's a lot of skepticism, you got to just be on it and you got to kind of just live without compromise. And so we started kind of saying, yeah, we're brewing without compromise, but the people in our community and us ourselves, we got to live that whole way all the time. What does it mean to you to live without compromise?
Maybe just not be so afraid of who we are. You know, we're just all so different. And, you know, Bill woke up with a non-alcoholic brewing idea, which was crazy. You know, obviously it was crazy. You have a dream, you know, you told me about it. I'm sure on different days you wake up and maybe wish you didn't have it, because maybe it makes you look like an idiot, you know, in whatever circle you're in that day. And that's the same with me. You know, you asked me a lot about my dreams, and I shouldn't think of them and go, well, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but I want to be a high school basketball. You know, I know how much sense it doesn't make. You know, if I could remove that statement from my brain, like, nothing made sense till it happened, you know what I'm saying? And this, again, back to the whole, did you have a dream? I mean, that's crazy. There's like people with a dream is a small, small, small percentage of the world, you know, and you know, that's how I feel if I drive in without a song idea. I take song ideas for granted. There's a lot of people in life who would love to write a song, but they don't have an idea. That idea is so goal. It's like intangible and it's magic. And it's crazy to walk in one day and you have nothing and you leave with a song. And I think that's a great metaphor for just everybody. I think God made everybody creative. And we all have talents and gifts. And you know, I hope we have a circle of friends or a foundation of relationships that will kind of support, you know, us and give us kind of that foundation we need to just get up every day and go, I'm going to chase that a little bit today. You know, I'm going to go after that a little bit today. So that's living without compromise to me.
You can find out more about Fancy Like at athleticbrewing.com. We can ship to almost anywhere in the U.S. Sign up for our newsletter, be notified of all the things that we do. And if you're around any of the shows that Walker Hayes is going to be touring this summer, go check them out. Bring some athletic with you or buy some there. Hope to see you out on the road. Stay fancy.